You're with James Freeman and the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome back to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Wednesday, the 24th of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And if you've just joined me, I've been talking about policing in London and asking if the Met Police are guilty of two-tiered policing. My guests were Stan and Dan from Voice of Wales and political commentator Sophie Corcoran. I think when you sum up everything about what happened yesterday, I think it is clear that the Met have got questions to ask. Dan and Stan at the Voice of Wales put forward a very, very strong argument, I thought, for why actually it's a very convenient news story for the Met to have yesterday in terms of the scuffles that broke out between police and those celebrating St. George's Day, because of course yesterday the one thing they didn't want to be headlines was the fact that they were totally embarrassed in their case against Tommy Robinson. So I think there is a good credence to that, and when you hear the fact that the police were basically going into pubs that were peaceful, packed full of people celebrating St. George's Day, and just kicking them out onto the streets where there were lots of police waiting, I think the Met have got questions to answer, quite frankly. But they did also acknowledge that there were people there that were intent on causing trouble as well. So, like always, I think the story is more nuanced than what the press or certain aspects of the press would like to report on. We also talked about the Gaza protests and whether they should be allowed to go ahead. Personally, I think you get into very, very difficult water if you start saying, well, you can have this protest, but you can't have that protest. Have the police been fair there? Well, I think in recent months we've heard of there's been quite a few arrests of people at those protests because they've been covering their faces or they've been had placards which are anti-Semitic. So I think overall, I think the Met are given a pretty hard time. But the big question I've got is you know, that policing yesterday, was that trouble really encouraged by the Met Police so that that was the headline and not the fact that they were totally embarrassed in court with Tommy Robinson? Anyway, it was a really lively first hour. If you did miss it, it'll be uploaded to the website in the next few hours. Just head over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button. And there you'll be able to watch or listen back to all of my previous shows. Right, now, coming up in the next hour, I'll be discussing the UN mission to scare populations around the world with its constant messages of doom. It wasn't always like this with the UN, but in recent years, the only message that seems to be coming from the UN and its bodies, the WHO and its other bodies, is that the world is coming to an end, either because of climate change or viruses. I'll be asking what can be done about this constant propaganda with my first guest, Steve Malloy, who is the founder and publisher of junkscience.com, which talks all about junk science coming from the likes of the UN. After that discussion, I'll be welcoming back Andrew Bridgen, MP, to the Freeman Report. I guess my first question to Andrew will be, what he thinks was achieved by last week's House of Commons debate on the government's COVID-19 response and excess deaths. Has the government given a response to the debate? And if so, what has it said? What are MPs saying about the debate? Very, very disappointing that so few, again, turned out for this debate, particularly given that it was a full debate. And let's be honest, the COVID inquiry is not asking any relevant questions that the public want answered. After we've discussed that, I want to discuss the British government's use of midazolam during 2020 and 2021, where we're all told that COVID was killing lots of people in hospitals and care homes. Well, yesterday I had Jackie Devoy on the show. She's just released a new film called Playing God, which accuses the British state of committing democide, which, of course, is the murder of its citizens. So I want to hear what Andrew has to say about that. Will he go as far to say that the British government has been murdering its own citizens? Well, going by his posts on X, I think that is exactly what Andrew will say. As in the past few days, he's posted a link to analysis by Dr. Wilson Tsai, who has published peer-reviewed statistical analysis that shows the UK spike in deaths in April 2020 was wrongly attributed to COVID. What Dr. Wilson Tsai has shown in his analysis is that the spike in deaths in April 2020 was actually correlates with injections of midazolam. His analysis has returned a correlation coefficient of 90% with excess deaths across all regions of the UK. Now, of course, you know, all statisticians will know correlation doesn't equal causation. But to account for 90% of the variance in a correlation coefficient, that's pretty high, and it suggests there's something going on there. Now, those who follow this will also be aware that the British government ordered several years' worth of midazolam at the start of 2020 and used all of it in the space of a few months, only to order more stocks later that year. We also know that NHS guidance to nurses was changed to offset concerns nurses had about giving a drug that suppresses breathing to people suffering from a virus that also suppresses breathing. The updated guidance essentially told nurses to ignore valid concerns about doing this. So the government ordered huge amounts of midazolam and essentially told nurses to ignore very real and valid concerns about using the drug with COVID patients. But was it all done on purpose to create the spike in deaths that was used to justify the lockdowns and other restrictions? Or is it a case of government overreach, trying to do the right thing by preparing for the worst and then just messing it all up, as government quite frequently does? That is certainly a very real question. And based upon everything we know about what happened and the fact that these dangerous mRNA injections are still being pushed, I have to say that I am firmly on the side that this was all done on purpose to actually create the pandemic in the first place. But what does Andrew think? And what do other MPs think? Because Andrew is not the only MP now asking questions about what went on with midazolam. You know, what do they think about all of this? And you know, why are they not speaking out? Are they worried that they're going to have the whip removed, just like has happened to Andrew? All of that in just a moment. If you want to get in touch with me, then email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, lots of you over there at the moment, get yourself over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk, TNT.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper. Gemma, have you heard any, have you got any updates on that school incident in Wales?
Yes, absolutely, James. That story was breaking at the top of the last hour, and more details have emerged since then. Three people have been injured. One person has been arrested, and the school was put on lockdown. Parents were reporting that pupils were texting them. Their kids were texting them saying, "Well, I can't get out of the classroom." They were locked inside. Reports of a stabbing at the moment. Vaughan Gething, the First Minister of Wales, has come out and said how shocked he is, and also a local councillor for the area, which is at Ammanford in Carmarthenshire, has also said he's doing everything he can to support the school. We've had emergency vehicles up there, two air ambulances, several police vehicles, two ambulances, the ground vehicle ambulances as well. We're not sure of the condition of the person that's allegedly been stabbed. It just says one person injured. Police investigations ongoing at the moment. Police are warning people not to speculate too much on social media, but no charges have been brought. So until people are arrested and then definitely charged and court proceedings are active, then then you are allowed to comment on social media and you are allowed to say what you see, which many people outside who live near the school have. They've been telling people that the rush of emergency vehicles to the school just an hour ago was absolutely unprecedented. And also it does raise the issue of knife crime once again. We don't have guns in this country. We have knives. They're the UK version of guns, and they do a lot of damage, not just in the capital where knife crime is epidemic, but outside in many of our towns and cities. Knife crime is a huge, huge issue for police and for communities. So that's the situation with the school at the moment. Three injured, one person arrested. Police say they're not looking for anyone else in connection with this. They have arrested somebody. They haven't charged them yet, but the school being put on lockdown, you know, once again, that word has become a lexicon of our vocabulary over the last 4 years. And it seems much more normalized now than it ever was, that as soon as anything happens within any school or business or community, lockdown is deployed as the kind of solution to this. Concerned parents rushed to the school gates, waiting for some answers. As I say, many pupils were texting their parents at their school saying that they weren't allowed out of classrooms and the teachers were in there with them. I'm sure the school did that for their safety. But that's the situation with this school at the moment. We might know more if charges are brought by police on the person that they've arrested.
And what do we know about the school, Gemma? Was it a primary school? Was it a secondary school?
It looks like a secondary school, actually. And I'm not even, and this is not me trying to dodge my responsibilities as a journalist, but I do want to get it right, that Welsh is a very complicated language, and I wouldn't know how to pronounce the school at all. I can kind of ostensibly say, you'll know more than me. You live in Wales. You live in South Wales. Ysgol Dyffryn Aman. I don't think that's probably how you pronounce it at all, but that's the school. Right. But looking at the images, school in Amanford, hence the Aman, it's in Carmarthenshire in South Wales. Looking at the images, it looks very much like a secondary school here, quite a large building, quite high fences, typical secondary school in the modern era, what looks more like a prison camp than a school. Police spokesman has confirmed that Dafydd Powys Police is dealing with the incident there, three injured, receiving treatment, and one person arrested, and emergency services still at the scene. One mother is quoted as saying that her daughter texted saying, we're in lockdown, mum, can't get out of the classroom. So yes, it does look like a secondary school, and that's all okay. We know at the moment.
I mean, interesting that the police should say, requesting from the public not to speculate. I don't want to kind of suggest anything, but usually when the police say that, it's because actually, I think more recently, because there's something to do with maybe it's a racial thing going on, and they don't want the public, speculating on it. I don't know. Have you checked social media? Are there any kind of what are people saying at the moment? Is there any speculation whatsoever, Gemma, that
No, there isn't at the moment. It's obviously a breaking story. Social media is not one I go to in terms of, because once you go down one route of speculation, it's a whole can of worms. And I can understand. I'm not on the side of the police pretty much ever now after the events of the last 4 years going on anti-lockdown marches. But I understand how things can kind of take on a life of their own on social media. But nobody's been charged. So, you can speculate until someone's charged. They're talking about contempt of court. There's no court proceedings brought yet. No one's even, it's just an arrest.
Yeah.
I suspect charges will be brought and then proceedings will be active, and social media is a broadcast platform like any other. But at the moment, it was the three injured, huge, huge emergency services presence outside the school, certainly. Maybe they thought it was going to escalate more than it did. Maybe that was the fear there. And obviously, lockdown. Pre-2020, we wouldn't have counted this. Maybe the school would have been evacuated.
But there's also I've seen lots of discussions online and in certain groups about how schools across Wales, I don't know whether it's happened in England, but certainly it's happened at my daughter's and my son's school, whereby schools have definitely bolstered their infrastructure. So now, you've got electric gates at the school, you've got bigger fences. That's all happened in the last year there. And of course, the more extreme views online are that's because they're going to bring in more lockdowns and they're going to lock the kids in the schools. I don't know whether that's true. But anyway, very, very worrying for parents, I think. And obviously I'm concerned about this story because I live in Wales. I've got two kids that go to school here. So Gemma, yeah, if we can find out more, obviously, for tomorrow's show and maybe talk about it then, maybe when things are a little bit clearer. But thank you very much for that story, Gemma Cooper. Right. OK, I've got a great hour coming up for you next. My next guest is Steve Malloy. He is the founder of publisher junkscience.com, which is all about debunking a lot of the nonsense we're being told from the UN that the end of the world is coming. It's either coming from a virus or it's coming from climate change. So we're going to talk about that. And then after Steve, I'm going to be welcoming back Andrew Bridgen MP to the Freeman Report once again. So don't go anywhere. Well, you can get a cup of tea, but that's just about it. Otherwise, other than that, stay where you are, right here on TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
It sounds pretty good.
It sounds real, dude.
Not bad, huh?
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, one of the reasons, the founding reasons of why TNT was launched was to counter a lot of the disinformation and misinformation being spread in legacy press. And of course, one of the big issues that we hear about all the time is climate change, is the fact that the world's going to come to the end because of a pandemic or it's going to get too hot for us all to live. And obviously, we spend a lot of time debunking this, but I've got another publisher. His name is Steve Malloy. He is the founder of junkscience.com, and this is exactly what Steve does as well. So welcome to the Freeman Report, Steve Malloy.
Well, James, thanks for having me.
Steve, let's start with junk science. What kind of stories do you publish? What kind of things do you talk about on the platform?
So I've been working in this area for 34 years now. I have a background in science, statistics. I'm a lawyer. I've worked on basically every environmental public health issue the past, 30 some odd years. I've run junk science since the dawn of the internet, 1995. And what I do is try to spotlight bad science, obviously bad science that is used to advance agendas. I've done a lot of, nowadays I do a lot of work almost entirely on just climate because climate subsumes everything. But I have done all sorts of public health issues, diet, smoking, just other environmental issues, just, everything over the years. So I view myself as pretty well versed in, if you read about science in the newspaper, I can pretty much tell you how it's probably junk.
Yeah. Let's start with climate change, because, of course, we're consumed, I think, well, our legacy media is anyway, with stories about how the world is getting hotter. Every time there was a fire in Europe in the summer, even if it was started by arsonists, it's down to climate change. What do you think is behind all of this? Because there clearly is an agenda here. I don't think there's many of us now that really believe that the world is heating up because of CO2, or there's lots of people who don't believe that. So there's clearly an agenda. What do you think that agenda is, Steve?
Yeah, well, so the agenda is several. Well, it's multifold. It depends on who you are. So, there are, I guess at its core, climate is part of the leftist agenda. The leftists want to, control us, tell us what to do. They're totalitarians. If you look at all their solutions for climate and every other problem, is just more government and government telling you what to do. So that is really at the heart. And they get to that because climate affects the entire economy and every aspect of your life. So I wrote a book 15 years ago, Green Hell, How Environmentalists Plan to Control Your Life. It's all about this part of the leftist agenda. There are also other agendas. There's an economic agenda. You have, people trying to make money off this wind, solar, EVs, we call them rent seekers. People looking for government mandates and subsidies to earn a living. And then I guess the other main agenda is communist China. Communist China, its goal is to be the lone global superpower by 2049. To that end, it is entrapping Western countries into green energy, which really only comes from communist China. You cannot build an EV, for example, without communist China. So by mandating EVs and encouraging them, you're just making yourself dependent on China. And at the same time, you're also enriching China. It's the same sort of way that Europe got itself. Europe is really the cause. Climate is really the cause of Ukraine invasion, because Europe abandoned fossil fuels because of climate, made itself dependent on Putin, and at the same time enriched Putin and made the whole invasion possible.
Yeah. I mean, this is a question that I have often asked myself, when I'm kind of speculating and trying to think, why would we be seeing the things we're seeing? Because, of course, you're quite right. China and India, they're still building coal power stations. They're running along with things nice, economy's going quite nicely, thank you very much, building lots of new infrastructure. At the same time, as part of this Paris Accord, Western countries are being basically told that we've got to go back to the caveman era in terms of if we really are going to achieve net zero. And on top of that, you're right, a lot of this green technology, whether it's solar panels or EVs, is actually coming out of China now. So, I mean, do you think that it is possible that actually China, which is clearly very, very powerful economically now, has actually managed to capture the global debate and maybe even capture our governments?
Oh, totally. We are totally dependent on China. Let's just say, for example, that China was to invade Taiwan. Would we be able to do anything? Well, no. If China wanted Taiwan, they could just walk in. And why is that? Well, China, as China showed with Australia during COVID, China will take retaliatory action. For example, in the United States, we don't make any antibiotics. All our antibiotics come from China. A large part of cell phones we get come from, the smartphones we get come from China. A lot of stuff comes from China. If China was to, put an embargo on that, our economy would shut down. And so China really already owns us, and we should be decoupling from China. Everybody in the West should be decoupling from China. But we're not, because, our politicians are corrupt. They've got their own interests. They're not looking out for us. This is a real problem.
Yeah, because it is very curious, isn't it? Because we know Joe Biden isn't running America. A lot of people are saying that it's Obama that is controlling things from the background. But I've often wondered, because there's some really bizarre stuff going on in America. You've seen press conferences where the president is addressing the press, and then suddenly all of his aides just jump up. They kick the press out because the president was going off-piste. And he's just looking confused. And you think, who's actually running the United States? Who is running the show there?
Yeah. No, well, no one really knows. I think there's some sort of Soviet if you will, some secret Soviet that, runs the federal government. It's obviously not Joe Biden, and the guy's mentally incompetent. His sole value was to appear to be the moderate option to Donald Trump, who, you know, the left hated and convinced, many people to vote against. So Biden is not in charge, clearly. It's leftist. But, you know, it's not just the United States. I mean, Australia, Western Europe, Canada, all the Western powers are run by leftists. And that's why you see all of them have embraced this climate agenda, because it's the leftist goal to control all of us, everything we do.
Do you think, I mean, I would replace that word with globalist, actually, rather than leftist. I do accept your point, though, that, and, you know, if you've obviously been working in this area for 30 odd years, you'll be familiar with the fact that actually there's a lot of people in the UK, the environmental movement, which sprung up in the 60s and 70s, has actually been captured and taken over by the corporations essentially now, and it's been hijacked and it's all about climate now. Of course, that came from the left side of politics. But do you think that they're clearly using left politics or the left leaning side of politics, and they, you know, as to push their agenda? But I would say they're globalists, and you know, they report to the global elite.
Yeah. Well, you can call it, I guess, whatever you want. I mean, the fact is that the political left, over the last 100 years, has been slowly capturing every institution globally. If there is a, you know, the globalists want one world government. You know, Larry Fink is the CEO of BlackRock, largest investment manager in the United States. He's a leftist. He wants totalitarianism because then, you know, totalitarianism imposes certainty on markets. All these people have the same crazy goal. I don't know exactly that all their visions are the same. They just sort of imagine that they just want to be in charge of us and be able to tell us what to do. And whether they're, you know, you call them globalists or leftists or communists, whatever it is, they do not mean well for the vast majority of us.
And that's the point, right? Nail on the head there, Steve, I think. Yeah, that's the point, isn't it? These people, particularly at the top of the tree, they're sat in their castle. They own the Federal Reserve. They own the other central banks. They get to print all the money. And they don't want us peasants waking up with new technologies and cutting them out of the deal. I think you're absolutely right there. Steve, we're going to take a quick break now for the news headlines. Stay where you are, because after this break, I'd like to talk about the WHO, stay on them, and talk about this pandemic accord, and also the changes, the proposed changes to the IHR, the International Health Regulations. So I'll get your view on all of that right after this break here on TNT.
Now, TNT Radio News.
It's hot tea. It's very hot.
It's hot news.
So hot.
Yeah, it's hot news.
Hot news.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Months after he was forced off air over a sordid sex photo scandal involving a teenage boy, disgraced British newsreader Hugh Edwards has officially resigned from the BBC. The UN Human Rights Chief says he's been left horrified by the discovery of mass graves outside two hospitals in Gaza. And the US Senate has approved a bill that would ban TikTok in the country if its China-based parent company ByteDance refuses to sell.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Right. Now, Steve, after the disaster that was the last 4 years with lockdowns, restrictions, mandated medications, experimental ones at that, you'd think that the WHO, the World Health Organization, would be turning around 180 degrees with its tail between its leg and leaving us all alone, given that it was arguing for all of these. But of course, we know that it's been pushing for this pandemic accord, the treaty, which will mandate, or it wants to mandate, a lot of this. Now, in the last couple of days, the other angle that it was playing was trying to make changes to an existing treaty, which is the International Health Regulations. What's been reported is the draft document, which is going to be decided this week, has actually dropped a lot of the things that we were worried about. So the WHO will not be able to mandate anything. It will remain just advice to governments. And a lot of the other things we were worried about. Do you think we can all go home now, Steve, and say job done? Or do you think this is just more smoke and mirrors from the WHO? Bit of a loaded question there, I guess.
Yeah, no, look, leftists never accept defeat. They just go back to the drawing board. So this stuff will all come back. You know, look, the goal is control of all of us. The Biden administration has this sort of all of government approach to climate. Well, leftists just have an all of everything approach to totalitarianism. And so this is why they have captured every institution, including the UN and the World Health Organization. That's why they exploited COVID, from the very beginning of COVID. They were trying to figure out, they knew that the pandemic would end one day. So they tried to go from, the COVID lockdowns into a climate lockdown. And it's all really the same thing. It's using every handle out there to gain control of us. And we don't need any more treaties. We don't need the UN. We don't need Western countries should withdraw from these organizations because they've been corrupted. The WHO is owned by China. China and Russia block anything productive that the UN could do. All these are just bad organizations. They come out of World War II. They were set up by Soviet agents working in the United States, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, World Health Organization, the UN. These are all just disasters, have all been disasters. They have never produced anything useful for anybody.
Yeah, and of course, there's lots going on coming from the UN, isn't there, as well as via the WHO. They want to mandate these experimental medicines. They want to be able to mandate whether we can get locked in our houses. But we also see, health advice coming from the UN on, say, gender ideology. And I had somebody on last week who was talking about exposing this person. It was a trans woman, obviously really a man, who'd been put in a position of power within the UN to give health advice to other trans people, who'd been posting on about bestiality and all sorts of this weird sort of stuff. So there's a lot of destructive stuff coming from the UN. This is not just about the misinformation on climate and then all the stuff to do with pandemics. We are also seeing a big push from the UN in terms of pushing this gender damaging gender ideology. Now, Steve, you're part of all of us, everybody who's pushing back against that. Do you think we're winning at the moment? Because there's a lot going on and I think we've had a lot of successes, but do you think we're winning?
No. we on the right, or we normal people, we talk about these things a lot, and we explain a lot to each other, and we pat each other on the back, but the left is relentless, and we are far from defeating these people. You talk about what is the UN worrying about, these transgender, even if this was a real thing, it's a very small percentage of global population. Meanwhile, we have violent wars in Russia, Ukraine, and in Israel, and there are still many serious public health problems. Supposedly 5,000 children die every day from malnutrition around the world, and we and the UN is worried about nonsense. The WHO is worried about nonsense. They're preparing for a once in a century pandemic. Well, people die every day needlessly. There's hunger around the world. So these are not serious organizations. These are organizations that have been set up and captured to impose totalitarianism on us.
Yeah, I'm going to finish this interview being a bit more optimistic, Steve. I do think actually we are winning. But the thing is, it's one of these fights that is perpetual, isn't it? Because the people doing this are in positions of power. So like you said, they're not going to stop. So it's up to us to keep on resisting and wake as many people up as possible, which is obviously what TNT... Sorry, go on.
Yeah, so I think it's important. One of the things that people on the right don't do, they're, overly focused on facts and logic. And, they think, well, if I just show the facts and the logic that, well, anybody should be convinced. But, the people on the left don't care about your facts and logic, obviously. There are two sexes. They don't care about that. Okay. I mean, climate, you can debate about because it's just, hard to show one way or another. But there are only two sexes, yet they have destroyed that concept. So these people don't care about reality or facts or logic. They are bent on their twisted mission. And until people on the right realize that, they are our mortal enemies, just like China is the mortal enemy of the West. The left is the mortal enemy of the right. It's, good versus evil. And that is just the way it is. It is. And until people on the right realize the existential struggle we're in with these evil people, we're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. And that's why I do what I do, Steve. And I'm sure by the sounds of it, that's exactly why you do what you do with junkscience.com. So if you're watching this, get yourself over to Google and take a look, junkscience.com. Thank you so much, Steve Malloy. Thank you for joining me on the Freeman Report.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Right. OK, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'll be welcoming back Andrew Bridgen, MP, to the Freeman Report. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days. They haven't drank anything. They're cold. They're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud. Just absolutely mud.
So the country has been in prolonged drought so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution. And we can be. Remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay.
And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution, one rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third generation race car driver. And we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
The Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right. Okay. We're going to get stuck straight in. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome back to the Freeman Report, Andrew Bridgen, MP. Hello, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you, James.
Right. Now, Andrew, we've got a lot to fit in for the next 15 minutes. So I'm going to start with that debate, which you fought for a long time to get that full debate in the House of Commons on the government's pandemic response and excess deaths. How do you think it went?
Well, I was disappointed with the turnout of elected representatives. I know that every elected member will have got many, many emails from their constituents urging them to attend that debate, because excess deaths is something that affects every community and every constituency across the country. And again, much of the developed world that took the experimental medications following the pandemic. There were only about 15 or 16, a couple of members were there for a part of the debate. And that's not a really very good turnout for 650 MPs. Mm. But what I can tell your viewers and listeners is that the public gallery was absolutely rammed. And there were hundreds and hundreds of people who couldn't get in, who I addressed in Parliament Square after 5 o'clock when the debate was over. So huge public interest. Once again, Westminster is out of step with public concerns, excess deaths, vaccine harms, the WHO, net zero, lots of things that concern the public, which no one in mainstream media or the mother of all parliaments appears to want to discuss.
Do you think MPs are aware of how bad it looks? Because, I mean, I've spoken to people, lots of people over the past few months, people who have changed their mind about the whole debate. And the reason they changed it is because they were watching these debates and you asking questions in Parliament, which are valid questions. I mean, you can say whether you believe, you know, the jabs have caused harms or not. That's an argument you can have. But it's a really important question to ask, isn't it? And I think the message that I've got is that people have been shocked that MPs are not, don't think this is important enough just to turn up. Do you think MPs realise how bad they look in the eyes of the public?
I don't think they do, or perhaps they just don't want to. I mean, the number of people that email me from around the country who say that they've contacted their own elected representative, their own member of parliament on these issues, and basically they no longer get replies. I mean, that is unbelievable. And I've been an MP for 14 years and I've never not replied to a constituent's email, even if it's hostile, because that's just not an option. There's no one else for them to go to.
Yeah. So. And what about the government, Andrew? Presumably, the government have given a response, have they, to the debate?
Well, the government minister and the Labour shadow spokesman responded to the debate. It was a lot of word salad. What I can tell you is that I think we've completely now got rid of this notion of safe and effective. Neither front bench were willing to repeat the mantra safe and effective. They neither said safe nor effective separately. So we are making progress. And as I pointed out in my opening speech, safe and effective was the marketing slogan for thalidomide. It's actually been banned following the thalidomide scandal. Pharmaceutical companies were banned from ever making the claim safe and effective for a product unless there were considerable caveats. But of course, in the COVID-19 pandemic response vaccines, so-called vaccines, it wasn't Big Pharma that were making these claims. It was politicians, health ministers, and the media who were acting as Big Pharma's marketing arm and promoting them as safe and effective. I think many who did that and have done it since, probably in correspondence, will come to regret that deeply. And that's one of the reasons, I think, why many colleagues don't want to come to the debates. They would have been urged with template letters across Parliament from all the parties to write responses to their constituents over the last 3 years, assuring them that the vaccines were safe and effective. And it's, you know, it's very hard for them then to come and listen to arguments that might undermine their political position, particularly when we've got a general election later this year sometime.
Yeah, of course. And I'm sure you'll agree with me as well, Andrew. You've been used as the example, haven't you, having the whip removed. So there's always that threat, the sort of Damocles above MPs' heads. Andrew, let's talk about the potential link between mRNA vaccines and cancer. Turbo cancers is being referred to. In the last 2 weeks, I've had Professor Angus Dalgliesh, who's a world-leading oncologist. I've also now had Dr. William Mackis. He's also a world-leading oncologist in Canada. Both now are saying that there is such a thing as turbo cancers. I think we've got 26 peer-reviewed papers now in the literature as well. And they're linking it to the mRNA vaccines. What are your thoughts on this? It's because, you know, this is just another bit of evidence, isn't it, of the harms that these vaccines are doing?
Well, what we do know from the side effects of these novel treatments is that they disrupt our immune systems. And anything that disrupts your immune system increases the risk of cancer, because it's your own immune system that sorts out cancers that develop naturally in our bodies every single day and prevent it becoming a problem. On top of that, what we've also got is considerable contamination of the mRNA vaccines with DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, which then that's going to go into the nucleus of our own cells along with the mRNA. And if that integrates, if it integrates into our DNA and disrupts a gene, that can lead to an increased risk of cancer. And clearly, when you've got a situation where it's now been discovered that there were hidden sequences in the Pfizer, DNA sequences in the Pfizer vaccines, which are the SV40 promoter region, the simian virus, which is linked to introducing foreign DNA into the cell's genome, the nucleus. And they were never disclosed to the regulator. They've been discovered by independent analysis since. I mean, quite honestly, James, the discovery that Pfizer had not disclosed that, that should have been an immediate recall and cessation of the implementation of those novel treatments, but it hasn't. And that's deeply worrying. And obviously, you know, that would be one potential explanation of why Pfizer spent $43 billion acquiring a new cancer treatment company earlier this year.
Andrew, do you think we're ever going to get justice for this? Because look, you know, we've got the contaminated blood debacle that is still ongoing decades later. We're about to see a big change in the UK Parliament this year. You know, if we believe the polls, then we're going to see a Labour government. And as far as I can see, they're more for all of this than the Tory government. You know, we've heard Labour ministers in the last few weeks stand up in the House of Commons and say that they still believe the jabs are the best way of protecting against coronavirus, even though we actually know our immune systems, the thing that nature gave us, are the best. Do you think we're going to see justice for this, or do you think we're going to have to wait a long time?
Well, I was warned before I was expelled from the Conservative Party that they wanted to cover up the vaccine harms for 20 years. And yeah, I mean, they'll think they'll get away with it if you look at the way other things, other scandals have been covered up. I mean, you know, I tried to expose the Post Office Horizon scandal more than 10 years ago, and we had all the evidence, but no one would listen. I find myself in a very similar situation over the vaccine harms and the excess deaths. But I've got a feeling that that they're not going to be able to keep a lid on this. I think after the general election, if we do, we're going to have a lot of new MPs, whatever the result, because so many colleagues in the House are standing down. That is another interesting development. And new MPs will tend to do whatever the whip's office tell them. They don't have the confidence to make independent choices. They're lobby fodder. I think, you know, it'll take us at least 12 months to get back to where we are now. And that's 12 months more of these novel products being rolled out and more harm being done. And of course, the first step to sorting out a problem is admitting you've got a problem. Well, people might know. I mean, I think most people in the UK, they know there's something wrong with these vaccines. I would say it's 75-80% of people know this, and the uptake is very low. But now we're seeing them being pumped into animals that are being farmed, animals that are going into the food chain, so food supply. So this is another nightmare situation, that untested medications are being put into our food through the farming industry. Of course, they don't need informed consent from those farm animals. And I'm well aware there could be various risks of prions, et cetera, which could also pass onto the land as a natural part of the farming process. So we've got huge, huge problems. And this, you know, what I want is an immediate cessation. I did call for that at the end of my speech last Thursday. Given the evidence, again, call for an immediate suspension of all these mRNA treatments for humans and animals. And obviously, we did pass the motion, which is to call on the Hallett Review, which is the UK's COVID inquiry, which has come under a lot of criticism for not asking the right questions and basically being predetermined, but it's under a lot of scrutiny now. That's an open module for, which would be the analysis of the take evidence on the safety and effectiveness of the vaccines and other treatments.
Yeah, and of course, we shouldn't be too pessimistic because, of course, the UK is just one country. This is something that's happened around the world, and there's lots going on around different countries, South Africa, the US, Australia. So I'm hopeful that it will come out at some point. Now, Andrew, the other big issue that people are talking about is midazolam here in the UK. Jackie Devoy has just released her film Playing God, which talks about government democide in the UK. And there is also some analysis, isn't there, from Dr. You did tell me it's William. That's
Wilson Tsai.
Wilson Tsai, that's right, yeah. Which is a really striking bit of analysis, which correlates very, very strongly the spikes in deaths in April 2020, which was the justification for a lot of the restrictions, with injections of midazolam.
He analysed them two ways. He looked at the deaths and compared them to case rate infection with COVID-19, which they didn't align with, but then he compared it to midazolam usage. And I mean, I hosted an event in Parliament for families who believe that their relatives and loved ones were, their end was hastened through NG163, which is the use of midazolam and morphine. And I think we had 54 victims' families in a committee room. They all gave their statements. I think the evidence is becoming fairly compelling, and also lots of very suspicious things, James. So midazolam was removed from NG191, which is the ancestor of 163, the original protocol, and 163 has been removed from the NICE website.
Yeah. Now, Andrew, I'm just going to play a short video. It's got Matt Hancock, and it's about basically his orders of midazolam. So I'll play that, and then I've got a question for you afterwards. So, studio, if you can play the video, please.
I mean, a good death needs three things. It needs equipment, it needs medication, and it needs the staff to administer it. So in terms of equipment, a few quick questions. Do you have enough syringe drivers in the NHS to deliver medications to keep people comfortable when they're passing away?
Yes, we do. There was a challenge raised about this about 8 days ago, and we resolved that. Actually, it wasn't so as big a challenge as was made public, and we've resolved that. So yes, right now we do.
And the second one is with that, that's the syringe drug is deliver medication, particularly things like midazolam and morphine. Do you have any precautions put in place to make sure we have enough of those medications to be delivered?
Yes. We've got a big project to make sure that those sorts of medications, as well as the ITU medications that I spoke about earlier, that the supply chains, the global supply chains for those medicines are clear. They are, in fact, those medicines are made in a relatively small number of factories around the world. So it is a delicate supply chain, and we are contact with the whole supply chain.
And in line with that, morphine is currently prescribed per patient. The reason to do that is stop it being abused. So I have to prescribe it for Mr. Hancock. However, in this situation, if you're going into a healthcare home, you may not want to waste precious things like morphine. Have you considered relaxing the laws around morphine prescribing for doctors and healthcare professionals so that there isn't waste?
That's something that we keep under review. I've looked at that particular point to reduce wastage of key medicines, and it's something that the supply team, in the department and the clinical team talk about all the time. I don't know if that's JBT's part of the clinical team, and he may want to say more.
Now, Andrew, that was Hancock. Obviously, the government ordered several years worth of midazolam ahead of the pandemic. They also relaxed the guidance to nurses, telling them to ignore their concerns by using drugs which suppress breathing on patients that are already having their breathing suppressed by COVID. Do you think that this was a purposeful action by the government to create the justification for all of the restrictions which came in, essentially democide?
Well, many people have that opinion, and the evidence appears to be compelling. And we've got absolutely deadly silence from the government on this issue. And when you look into NG163, its starting dose was 2.5 milligrams of midazolam, which is massively ahead of anything else. And that was regardless of the patient's frailty or weight. For some vulnerable elderly, that's a death sentence.
Andrew Bridgen, I think we'll leave it there on those words. Thank you so much for joining me on the Freeman Report. Please keep on doing what you're doing and come back on the Freeman Report again soon. Thank you, Andrew Bridgen.
Thank you, James, and thanks to TNT for bringing these issues out.
Thank you. Right, that's me all for today. I'll be back tomorrow, but don't go anywhere because we've got more great shows coming up right here on TNT.